guesting today with Rusty Rumley with the National Ag Law Center. You were here today at the American Society of Ag Consultants, kind of giving an overview of ag law. So tell us some of the hot topics today.
So some of the hot topics that we're working on right now are the 2023 Farm Bill. We're looking at development there. We've had a lot of interest in environmental laws, such as Waters of the United States. We're seeing movement for foreign ownership of ag land, and increasingly we're seeing a lot of interest in solar developments.
And you talked a little bit about solar and wind leases today. Now, is that something that you're seeing a lot of in Oklahoma?
Yeah, we've seen quite a bit of that development, especially on the wind side, the last decade or so, 15 years. We're probably going to be seeing a lot more solar going forward. With the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed into law back in August of this year, there's a lot of money out there for renewable energy. So over the next 10 years, there's going to be, we're expecting to see a lot of further development for particular solar.
Well, speaking of solar and wind, you know, we have seen lots of wind turbines throughout the state of Oklahoma, but what kind of, like, who is this good for? If you're an ag producer and you're thinking about considering solar or wind energy, who does this best suited for?
So for the landowners, if you are careful in signing the contract and you put a lot of forethought and you use a good attorney to make sure that you're signing a good deal, these can be pretty lucrative for the landowner. Like I said, rental rates, we've seen anywhere from $400 to $1,600 an acre. So, if you do that out over 25, 30, 40 years, that's a pretty significant cash flow coming in. I mean, it could be more lucrative than like your traditional oil and gas lease, which a lot of farmers in Oklahoma is going to be pretty familiar with. So, and it's steady income. It's not going to be dependent on the price of natural gas or oil like your traditional oil and gas lease are. So, I mean, there are potential benefits for the landowners, but it's going to be really important that they look at these leases carefully before they sign it, because once you sign the lease, it's too late.
Yeah, because you mentioned we're talking about 25 to 40 year leases.
That's right. A lot of these are 25 to 35 years, and then they have a couple of optional extensions, the exact same that a lot of the wind leases have here in Oklahoma. Oil and gas leases, a lot of them have clauses that, you know, they're good so long as oil and gas is produced in paying quantities. So a lot of these oil and gas leases have been on the books now for 70, 80 years. So, I mean, it really is going to depend. These are long-term leases, so it's going to be really important that you look at all the potential ramifications before you sign it, because these are leases that, you know, depending upon the age of the farmer, the average farmer right now is 58 years old. You sign a 40-year lease, maybe you'll be around to see the end of it, but probably it's going to be your kids or grandkids that are the ones dealing with this. So it's really important that you think this through, not just for your own sake, but for your kids and grandkids' sake as well.
Well, and because you mentioned the reason you're wanting to look at that contract is because you don't, if you're not careful, you don't get to go back to that land. Like you obviously mentioned, you can't graze cattle, things like that.
That's true. So for the solar leases in particular, a lot of that land, you're going to lose access to that for the life of the lease. And, it may not be your whole farm. It may be 60 acres or 80 acres or 100 acres of it. You're going to still have access to the rest of it. But that portion that's being used for the lease, you're probably not going to have access to it for the remainder of the lease. So it's going to be important that you get what you can get from it before you sign the contract.
Well, what happens if you do are one of those farmers or producers? What happens when it is time to get rid of the equipment?
So that's one of the things that you need to look at when you sign the lease in the very beginning is who's going to pay for decommissioning that project at the end of the lease. The equipment has got a useful life span of a long time. I mean, these panels can last 30 to 40 years, depending upon the make and model. So for the lease itself, when you negotiate it, you need to make sure that there's language in there about who's going to clean this thing up at the end of it. A lot of the ones that I've seen don't have that language in there, but there's nothing stopping the landowner from reaching out to the company and saying, hey, there's nothing in here about cleanup. Let's figure something out on this type of language.
You also were talking about the 2019-2020. We saw an increase of 39% in foreign-owned ag land. This is a hot topic, especially here in Oklahoma during election season, as you can imagine. But you said that was for Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado. So why are we seeing that?
So a lot of this land is – so one of the things that's a little bit – it's hard to track is they also include long-term leases as foreign-owned land. So a lot of your wind projects will have investors from the Netherlands and from Italy. So those long-term energy leases are also considered foreign-owned land under the FIDA statute. So we really don't know how much of it truly is foreign-owned. you know, you talk to a lot of farmers and say, well, your land's currently foreign owned. Well, they own the land. It's owned by an American. They farm the land themselves, and they're an American. But they also have a couple of wind turbines where maybe a 15% stake is owned by the Dutch. Well, that's treated as foreign-owned land, even though it is, you know, Americans that own it and Americans that farm it. So it's, you got to really delve into the details to see, you know, how much of it truly is owned.
And one of the biggest misconceptions, I feel like, is who foreignly owns the land?
A lot of the land here in the United States is owned by the Canadians, specifically forest land.
That's not what you hear.
But a lot of it's also, it's hard to determine who owns what. I mean, with the modern economy that we have, you know, land is owned, sometimes it's owned by individuals, but a lot of times it's owned by companies such as LLCs or corporations. Who's going to be shareholders of those corporations? Are there subsidiaries of the corporations? You know, you have a bank that takes a farm in foreclosure. Well, if some of the shareholders of that bank are foreign entities, now you've got foreign-owned land because you've got foreign investors of the bank that hold it. So some of this stuff's really, it's really tricky to go through this stuff.
Absolutely. What advice do you have for producers today, just from a law perspective, on what they need to be watching for?
Oh, agricultural law covers a lot of different topics. Usually the advice I give people is if you think you have a problem, it's generally better and cheaper to see an attorney early on. And the example I give is it's the same as with medical payments. Doing your annual doctor's visit, cheap. Going to the emergency room, pretty expensive. And it's the same thing with lawyers. If you're doing preventative maintenance, you're seeing lawyers before an issue becomes a big problem, those are generally going to be a lot cheaper to deal with than if you wait until you've gotten the foreclosure notice or something along those lines. So usually mine is maintain a good relationship with a lawyer that's familiar with agriculture. And if you do have questions, don't be afraid to spend $100 picking the lawyer's brain to avoid big problems down the road.
All right, Rusty, thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to help.